Megan McCain has entered the chat.
Welcome to Citizen McCain. I'm so happy you guys are here. Really quickly, today we have no guest. It's just Miranda and I. We just decided we were going to sort of end the summer because it, by the way, it's pretty chilly here, like in the DC area. It is not, I think it's like 60 something.
Oh my God. Can I kill you, please?
Ashley has a sweatshirt on. Like it's like, I don't know if fall's coming early, but I feel like the summer is coming to an end. And Miranda and I just decided in our Hot Topic meeting that we just wanted to just have one do it old school, the two of us. So we need more audience interaction today. So please raise your digital hand. Don't be shy. Elena, if you're watching, we always love to hear from you. Lucas,
Elena, Emily, all of our regulars.
Yeah, all of our regulars. We are happy to have you. So
you need to send some of that my way. Despite my sweater, I'm sick. It's the third week of school, so I will be sick until June. Everybody, just the heads up. Got my tissues. We need Kleenex to sponsor us. It is 110 degrees here in Los Angeles. Gosh. So I need you to send some of that my way. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's 107 in Arizona. My brother was telling me, and I was like, it's like horrendous. It's like lovely here. You could have like a nice picnic, like go outside. Anyway, so also if you are listening on the podcast, you want to join us on Zoom, you can register to do that at twoway.tv/Megan. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/@CitizenMcCain YouTube. Our channel is doing like pretty well, but you know, these YouTube numbers are so stressful. It's so
vacation.
Fucking
I'm blaming,
stressful. Like,
I'm
God, like, it's like, so
I hate the algorithm. I hate it.
I know. And we're going to say this one more time. And this is a joke. Miranda and I always say like, our biggest problem is that we should go like full racist, full conspiracy theory, full anti-Semitic. Like we just need to start delving into the source.
Anti-woman.
We need to be women who are telling everybody that women suck and we should just stay in the
barefoot and pregnant.
That's all. Women's only role is to serve men like that. If we did that kind of content, it would be way up. But unfortunately, that would be a lie. And
Megan, how did you submit to Ben this week? Like,
Ben knows who he married.
Yeah, same with Nick. I'm like, he's very well aware of who the person he married.
I bet. Yeah, he has no illusions about the woman he married. Yes. But I just want to thank you all again. It's been a really nice summer, but I am ready for fall. Also, really quick, I am officially in my third trimester, which is so crazy. And I can't believe that I'm going to give birth somewhat soon. I'm like kind of showing a little bit, but I think I just look fat. It's so
I can hear that, Ashley.
So soon. Yeah, it's true. It's
she's
fine.
Like,
no one's like
so
blaming
loud.
Me.
No, yeah, you look beautiful. Your skin has never looked better, by the way. Yeah. Like everyone keeps dropping the skincare to you. I'm like, yeah, get pregnant. You look amazing.
Thank you. Anyway, so I've got a lot coming up. And as I've told everybody, I'm due end of December, like right around New Year. And I'm going to do my best to make it. I think I can make it through before December break. And then because this is my third child, I know how to do this. And I should only take like around a four week, a month break, give or take a little. So it won't be, everyone just bear with me. We'll be fine. And then I think that Miranda and possibly we should consider having some fill-in hosts. So if there's anyone you guys like or want us to have with Miranda, and obviously Miranda, if you have some favorites like Sina, whatever, I think it would be good to have a few fill-in hosts while I'm out.
Sina, I think maybe Nikki, Jamie.
Yeah, Nikki.
Yeah, I got
totally.
Some ideas.
We got good friends and good people in media. So that's a little life update. And then is there anything else you want to update on your life, Miranda, then you're sick?
Oh, God.
Oh, and the Conjuring movie is coming out. Obviously, Miranda and I will be reviewing it and going to see it. Maybe Ashley will come and review it with us, too. The Annabelle doll is very important to us. And I'm really, like, genuinely excited about the new movie. It looks very good.
I'm very
really
excited.
Like the actors in it.
Yes, Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson, I think. That's right. Patrick Wilson. the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's in all those Insidious movies too, and those are amazing also.
They're great actors. Like, really.
They're incredible actors. Yeah. And yeah, so I need to do a full binge of all the Conjuring movies and the Annabelle movies to get, you know, all of my Warren family vibes back. And then I am dying to go to an AMC because they have this special popcorn bucket. You know how they keep doing these, like, special ones?
I need that.
Where it's like Annabelle, yeah, but not this one, the porcelain doll one, the movie version of her, and she's holding the bowl. So I'm thinking I can have both of them with me.
I need that. I need that too. I got to figure out how to track down that bucket.
They're at the AMCs. So we're going to work.
I'm an Alamo Draft House girl. I love an Alamo. I love an Alamo Draft House.
You might have to suck it up.
I could just send Ben's.
I went to a Regal over the weekend to do my K-pop Demon Hunters sing along, and the seats were like very Alamo Draft. They had pull out things like a first class tray table, and like the seats were leather and reclining. It was very fancy.
Snacks at the Alamo Draft House are better though. They have truffle popcorn.
I'm a hot dog girl. I ate a hot dog. Like, we had extra salted pretzels. Like, we are not slushies. We're not fancy. So I don't need truffle, whatever. I'm a movie theater hot dog gal.
Alamo Draft House is like I'm not just saying this, and then we will move on to hot topics, but for real, if you have one in your city, it is a pleasure to go to that movie theater. It is lovely. The seats are so comfortable. The food is so good. The people are so nice. Like, I love going to the Alamo Draft House.
I feel like
I'd
fall asleep. If I
oh no, it's wonderful. Somebody did fall asleep next to me one time, and I was like, I get it. This is very comfortable. Okay, the biggest news in the entire world, anywhere, is that, and we don't really normally cover Taylor Swift, and I just want to say, like, we are not
respectfully
Swifties.
Yes, respectfully, we're not Swifties.
I'm not, but I'm not a hater either. I'm like, I like some of her music. It's fine, but like, you know, she doesn't like reach me the way she does some people, but I'm not a Taylor Swift hater. I will say, yesterday when the big news is that she got engaged to her, now fiance, Travis Kelce. And of all people, and by the way, this journalist who asked this question of President Trump, can we find out who asked this question?
I did not recognize her, and I really tried to get a look at the profile, and I couldn't recognize her.
Let's play this clip really quick. Number one.
To ask you a serious question, but I have to tell you the biggest pop culture news of the year broke while we were in this cabinet meeting. Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are engaged, and the world wants your reaction, sir.
Well, I wish him a lot of luck. I think he's a great player. I think he's a great guy, and I think that she's a terrific person. So I wish them a lot of luck.
I'm serious.
Okay, so this was a cabinet meeting. So it just didn't mean not just the president and vice president, but all of his cabinet members. You saw Pam Bondi there. Tulsi was there. Like, a member.
J.D. Vance was there.
Exactly. Like, everyone's there. And I just think, like, to this journalist, maybe because she does look young, and I'm going to try and give her a break. And please find out who this person is, and you're invited to come on and defend your question. But every other journalist is making fun of you. I had a lot of people message me like, this is what's wrong with media today. This is what's wrong with political media today. If Trump is like out on the, you know, the Rose Garden or walking to his helicopter or to something and someone asks him that in a scrum, fine. But you're in a cabinet meeting. And I think part of the hate Taylor Swift gets from some people is because, I'm sorry, it's Reagan Reese from the Daily, it would be the Daily Caller. Of course, it's the Daily Caller from the Daily Caller. And thank you, Ashley. And so I think part of why I feel a little bad for Taylor Swift is like, she's not acting like a fool. Reagan Reese from the Daily Caller is. I think it's the dumbest question to ask the president. He just had a big meeting with Vladimir Putin. There's still questions about what's going
on
in
Ukraine. Exactly.
So much happening. We have National Guards in tanks here in Washington, D.C. Like, I just, this is what makes me be like, oh my God, I can't listen to Taylor Swift, but she didn't do this. Reagan Reese of the Daily Caller did. And I just think, like, you know, it must be so, I can't imagine what it's like being Taylor Swift, being one of the most famous people that ever. It's like Michael Jackson level, Madonna level, like it's hard to even fathom that level of fame. So everything she does, people just go crazy analyzing. And I think part of the problem, like I said, is like, it's not even her fault, but it's like mega oversaturation. And I think as much as people are very happy for her, I just feel like we're going to be hearing every minute detail about her life and this engagement and her getting married until the end of time, which again is fine if you're a fan, and that's fine in pop culture news, fine entertainment news. Don't ask it in a goddamn cabinet meeting. It's inappropriate.
We were trying to have our strategy prep meeting yesterday, and we're like, well, what's going on? And that was it. There was nothing. We had no ideas of what to even talk about for content because every single thing, notification on my phone.
We have topics.
We do have topics, obviously. Yes. This is not the whole thing. But like every single notification on my phone, every text that I was getting was in regards to this. And some of them were actually kind of insane takes in regards to.
Well, you have, the thing is, like, we have a resident Swiftie. Ashley is a Swiftie here. Yes. I know Swifties. Ashley's not the only one. I know people who love Taylor Swift, but everyone that I know in my actual life who is a Swiftie, they have a normal Swiftie relationship. It's like they're just mega fans. And there's always mega fans for pop stars. I think the problem is there are some people who make the fans look crazy. Like, there's some people that maybe are having like some psychological, parasocial issues that should be dealt with in a different fashion. And again, Taylor Swift can't control that either. It's like, you know, she inspires people. So I don't know.
I disagree. Okay. I think, and maybe if Ashley wants to comment or, you know, holler from her corner. But I think that in
but
a
Ashley's
way.
Not weird about it.
No,
like, you're
no,
just a
I'm
fan.
Not saying that.
Like,
I'm saying that in a way, Taylor encourages this sort of parasocial behavior because she engages with the fans in a way that makes them feel like she's
like maybe
friendly with them.
I should have
like
mic'd you.
She's invited fans into her home, and she's invited people to listening sessions, and she comments and she gets in DMs and she's befriended fans. So there, these people think that there's a very real possibility that they could be in her life in an actual organic way. And I think possibly 10 years ago, maybe that was something that could have happened. Now, absolutely not. But these people who have these visceral reactions to her movements, I don't think that they're that like touched in the head or off base psychologically. I think that there is an element that thinks that there is something there that they could have. It's not entirely parasocial. There is some sort of a give and take there because they do go to the shows and exchange things with each other, and they engage with her, and she gives them hugs and she speaks to them. It's so I don't know. And Ashley, please feel free to correct me because I am not a Swiftie scholar. But am I wrong? She has done these things.
Ashley said that's fair. I think one thing that's going to be interesting is she's obviously in love. They seem very happy together, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift do. And what will be interesting is, you know, now like he's hers and she's his, and it'll be interesting. You know, she's always been sort of like, if not single, but just giving like a ton of her life to her fans. And will she be more guarded? Will she be more private? Will she have a harder time maybe making as much music? And it's all, like I said, I'm not a hater. I'm not a Taylor Swift hater. I just am not like I'm really obsessed with Chapel Roan right now and Sierra Farrell. Like I love both their music. I think they're like, and I was telling Ashley, like I love a messy rock star. Like I love like a messy, flawed, and Chapel Roan's like a messy, flawed rock star. And I just think she has an incredible voice. So like who we respond to for whatever reason is personal, but she certainly is like the biggest, Taylor Swift's the biggest, arguably the biggest celebrity on the planet, with one exception. She cannot sway an election. That's what's always interesting about Taylor Swift. She cannot move a needle with her endorsement in politics, which is the one, it's an interesting little chink in the armor, but nobody can. There's no celebrity on the planet that can do that. People make their decisions in personal
ways.
So
personal, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
But speaking to her influence, there were a lot of people yesterday talking about.
I think she influenced voter registration, though. So
yes,
she did do
she
that.
Did, yeah. She did manage to get a ton because she posted a link and people were. She made it very easy to register new
and also
young
that's
voters,
fantastic.
Which is fantastic.
She should do that again.
Excellent. Yes. Please, every cycle, do that all the time. People should be registering to vote. God, you and I should be doing it all the time. But, you know, her influence is so vast. There is this whole, you know, population drop and people aren't having babies, specifically millennial women.
Yes.
And she was the face of the childless cat ladies and all of that. And there were a lot of conservatives and people on the right saying that this is actually like a really great move for the culture and society because she's embracing this like very traditional lifestyle.
If she has a child and then there's a population boom, that will be crazy.
Right?
Like if people all start having babies because she does. I have nothing else to say about Taylor Swift. We obviously wish them the best. It's
congratulations.
Nice. They seem genuinely happy.
They're a beautiful
couple. I never
thought
it was a PR relationship, by the way. I will say that.
I didn't either. And what's funny is
that's a weird conspiracy.
There's a whole subsect of the fandom called the Gaylers. And
we were talking about it with Ashley.
Yeah, I don't know if we wanted to get into this, but we have the time, so we can. And I'll start it.
We have some great topics.
Okay, I'm just going to say it real quick. Is that they thought it was fake, and Taylor Swift was going to like manufacture this like insane elaborate coming out, and that Travis was just her beard, and I think that's absolutely insane crazy. And so if we want to play the video, we can, just because it's hysterical. But for anybody who wants to get down to a crazy conspiracy rabbit hole, the Gaylers made their Reddit page private.
I didn't even know any of this.
They were tired of people coming on and looking at it.
I never know any. I don't know where the hell I am.
I think it started with her friendship with Karlie Kloss, allegedly.
Yeah.
So anyway,
there are really some blind spots in my pop culture knowledge sometimes where I'm like, I didn't know any of that.
They have their own name. It's crazy. There's the Swifties and then the Gaylers. Like maybe they don't get along. I don't know. So we'll see.
Do you want to talk about Cracker Barrel? Because I really do.
Please. I am dying. We've been trying to talk about Cracker Barrel for a week. So let's do it.
Okay. Just really quickly, I need to preface this. I've been to Cracker Barrel many times. I live in Virginia. There's Cracker Barrels here. And if anyone who's gone on a road trip in the South, they're everywhere. But I'm going to say something that's a little controversial. I am a Waffle House girl. I just am. I prefer Waffle House. If there's an option, they tend to sort of like be in the same kind of locations. And
well, we're also kind of trashy.
I ride really hard for Waffle House, and it's actually one of my pregnancy cravings, and it's hard to, like the DC, like Northern Virginia area. There's one, but it's like a half hour away from me. Anyway, but I really do. And that doesn't mean I don't like Cracker Barrel. I'm just saying, like, if I'm on a road trip, I'm going to Waffle House and not Cracker Barrel. That being said, I have been, and I know about the experience and the food. So Cracker Barrel got itself into quite a bit of a outrage and a pickle this past week. There has been a week of outrage over the rebranding of its logo. Cracker Barrel said that it will be reverting back to its original logo with the old timer character. Do we have a picture of the before and after? Thank you very much. Of the before. Okay, so the before has the literal man with the cracker and the barrel, and then it was going to be rebranded to this sleeker, cleaner, more like, you know, I think like
modern
logo. So Cracker Barrel tweeted yesterday, "We thank our guests for sharing your voices and love for Cracker Barrel. We said we listen and we have. Our new logo is going away and our old timer will remain. At Cracker Barrel, it's always been and always will be about serving up delicious food, warm welcomes, and the kind of country hospitality that feels like family. As a proud American institution, our 70,000 hardworking employees look forward to welcoming you to our table soon." One last thing. President Trump responded to this. And again, our president has better things to do than this. He said Cracker Barrel should go back. I mean, maybe not to the old logo, admit a mistake on a customer response, the ultimate poll, and manage the company better than ever before. They got $1 billion worth of free publicity if they play their cards right. Very tricky to do, but a great opportunity. I have a major news conference today. Make Cracker Barrel a winner again.
Oh,
remember, in just a short period of time, I made the United States of America the hottest country anywhere in the world. 1 year ago, it was dead. Good luck. I'm not really sure what that is. It's like a long tweet. Okay. You go first, Miranda, and then I have a lot to say. Do you care about Cracker Barrel? Did you care about this rebranding? Did you care about the woke? Oh, and also, it's worth noting, they also had plans to redo the inside of the Cracker Barrel. And Cracker Barrel looks like it looks like an old-timey restaurant. It's like wood and like it has like a giant gift shop with lots of like things in it that I personally would love to buy, like lots of like American flag stuff, like, you know, whatever. And they were going to redo it to make it look just like, honestly, like a normal restaurant, like cleaner and white and just like more sparse and more like modern, I guess.
Minimalist.
What did you think of this controversy?
Okay, so first of all, I think we were tricked. I think that this
okay.
I think that this whole thing was just like a cry for help, attention, whatever, like from Cracker Barrel, like, hey, talk about me for a few days. I don't think that any of this was real now, because this big about face a week later is insane. But maybe I'm wrong, because everybody seemed to hate this rebrand for some reason. Everyone is very attached to this Uncle Herschel guy next to a barrel that's only been around since 1977. And they're very emotionally attached to a sign. But I don't get it. I need you to explain it to me, because I've grown up here. We in California only got our first Cracker Barrel restaurant, I think, within the last 5 to 10 years. And it's in Victorville, which is like 2 hours away from me. It's like on the way to Vegas if you go the wrong way. So I've never even been to that one. I've been to one in Jacksonville when I went there with our friend Andy on a trip to a station.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he made me go there. We went there and to a Waffle House. He's like, you need to try these places. And it was great. It was an experience. I loved it. I did prefer the Waffle House, and we found a condom in the parking lot, which was hysterical. That was like my big takeaway from Waffle House. But, you know, I had the Coca-Cola cake at Cracker Barrel. It was delicious. So, you know, I love both of those spots equally, and I get it. And it was very Southern, and it was kitschy and adorable. It kind of reminded me of like a TGI Fridays, where they had like crap all over the walls and interesting things to look at. I don't understand why this turned into a political thing with the rebranding of the signs, because you see like Dunkin' dropped the donuts off of their name and changed their design, and nobody gave a shit. A lot of places it's just called like DD, like Dunkin' Donuts. Like, so I don't understand why Cracker Barrel caused such an uproar that the president had to get involved, other than it's more intertwined with Southern culture. I might just need you to explain this to me like I'm stupid, because okay. I don't understand why everyone was like all up in arms. This is very reminiscent to me of like the Sydney Sweeney American Eagle thing, where I'm just like, it's jeans. I don't get it. I don't understand like the drama.
Well, I think first and foremost, there's a huge cultural shift and a huge cultural backlash to the 2020 hyper woke era, where literally everything that even like people found insanely and irrationally remotely offensive was being removed and taken away.
Are we talking about like Mrs. Butterworth's and Aunt Jemima?
Yes.
Okay.
Like Aunt Jemima syrup, things like that, that were, remember when they were trying to get rid of
Uncle
Paw
Ben.
Patrol, because Paw Patrol had a cop dog in it, like a police
Chase.
Dog.
Yeah.
People were trying to, people were trying to remove Paw Patrol. Like, there was a time when it was just like everything everywhere was trying to be removed. And, you know, even like as extreme as statues that were torn down in my neighborhood and, you know, buildings and things that everyone found offensive. And there's been such a cultural backlash to all of that in the last 5 years. And I think a lot of this stuff is the breeding ground for how Trump got reelected now. And I think people are just very sensitive. Cracker Barrel is a predominantly Southern chain, or I associate with like Southern food.
Sure. It's just not available other places.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, I don't think that the customers are all white. I've been to Cracker Barrel, like I said, many times, and I've always found it to be like lots of different kinds of people eating there, and lots of different races, and lots. It's like, I couldn't say like this is just a white restaurant. That's like ridiculous.
Right.
So I think people are just hypersensitive to things being changed. And there's also this meme going around on Twitter that shows all the like, and again, this is like respectful to myself. I too am a white woman that wears dark frame glasses sometimes, so whatever. But it showed like the CEO of NPR, the woman that was responsible for the Budweiser insanity, the CEO of Cracker Barrel, and then there's one other woman I can't remember. There's all like older white woke women in charge for rebranding of these companies, and they're doing it in the image of what they like, which is probably like someone living in, you know, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, thinking that everything that people in the middle of the country and red state people like is trash and backwards. And I'm going to tell you, my family works in the Budweiser business on my mom's side. You can Google it. I lost a lot of money and clout because of the Dylan Mulvaney scandal. A lot of people were impacted on a lower level at the that worked for Anheuser-Busch in general. A lot of employees were impacted. And I think it was I tweeted, trust me, Cracker Barrel, know your audience, know your consumer. A Budweiser drinker is not someone who's going to be a fan of Dylan Mulvaney. And Budweiser, by the way, it is like clocked as one of like the worst economic decisions. It's like that and Coke Zero or New Coke, like of all time. Like it's actually taught in business schools that like this is how you like screw up a brand royally. And I think Cracker Barrel was probably like, well, we don't want a Budweiser ourselves. Like you need to know, and your customer, you have to listen to your customer, and your customer is saying, I don't like this. So I think people are just very sensitive to the brands that make them feel nostalgic, to the restaurants that they frequent, and they don't want it changed by, you know, and I say this as like a woman who wears dark glasses and used to live in New York City, but like they don't want it changed by people who live in, you know, who live in these cities and don't understand why things are popular to begin with. So I understood the controversy. I think it was a little overblown, but I think it's very smart that Cracker Barrel ended up listening to its audience and said, all right, we're gonna go back to the way it was. Don't worry.
Do you think that this fixes the problem?
I'm sorry, we do not have a question.
Do you think that this? We do have a question. Do you think that this fixes the problem for the customers?
Yes, I think it's fine.
They're gonna be like, oh, okay. We trust you again, or are they gonna be?
Yes.
Like, you know,
I don't think they care.
Trigger shy.
I think we won't be thinking about this or talking about this in like a week, let alone. Okay, we do have a question from Emily. Emily, feel free to join. Hello. How are you? Do you have a question about Cracker Barrel?
Yes, so I can explain this to you. Sorry, I have COVID, so I...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Gosh, I'm so sorry.
I'm terrible. Yeah, thanks.
Your nose looks like mine.
So I am on the mend. This new strain is nasty. It moves fast, but it felt worse. There was like a lot of body aches.
Oh my God.
So if like your legs, if your legs start hurting, just you're infected.
Oh,
it's too late.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So I was not a fan of this Cracker Barrel rebrand. So I can explain this as someone who grew up going to Cracker Barrel. There was one in my hometown. It's if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And the reason why people like Cracker Barrel is because it never changes. Like that's why you go. Like you go because you know what you're getting. You know, it's fun, it's nostalgic, it's a little hokey, and it's pretty white. That is a white person who goes to Cracker Barrel. And like it's weird, like if you think about Waffle House, and I do like Waffle House, not as much. If I had to pick, I'm probably going Cracker Barrel. Because to me, Waffle House is more like you go when you're drunk. You know,
that's fair.
Like that's like Waffle House, like for me, yeah. And like they are fun, and I think they both serve their purpose in different ways.
Yeah,
you know, like Cracker Barrel and Waffle House are always there when you need them.
Totally. I also think it's important.
Yes.
I think it's important for CEOs. Like one of the things that when I was watching some of the interviews with the woman who's the CEO right now or in charge of marketing, I think you should be a fan of your companies you're taking over.
Yeah,
I think it should.
Huge.
It
yes.
Seems like maybe like I remember the Budweiser woman saying like this is a really bro-y brand. Like that gets like frat houses drink this. Like we need to expand it. Like really lecturing the kind of people. And like you're a business. It's here to make money. And I think like Red Lobster has had a huge rebranding and resurgence by this like amazing CEO that used to be the CEO of P.F. Chang's. I apologize. I don't know his name. And he's been like, he does like these amazing ads and like these amazing viral videos where he's talking about, they did like a, they had like done a poll and the customers said they needed more spices in their like seafood boils. And then they came up with like three different kinds of spices and he was eating it and he just looks like so excited. And it's like, if you are going to be the face and the person marketing these companies, you should like it. You should want to eat at these restaurants.
Yeah.
And I think some of these people hired are just like people that come from like big shot advertising firms that are like looking down because it's not like a Michelin restaurant. And I think that, and I good for honestly good for Cracker Barrel, because trust me, you could have had the potential to lose a lot of money I don't remember the exact amount, but Anheuser-Busch lost, like, it was something gnarly. And again, I have to, like, it's public information, but it was like 40% of its stock. Like, it was like,
oh, wow.
Very significant amount of money. Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, because it was like part of it is like, so you're like looking down on the consumer. You're like, oh, we don't want white frat house guys drinking our beer. We need
$395 million.
Yeah.
Yep. It was a bloodbath.
Okay. Okay, if frat boys aren't drinking Bud Light, then like the world has stopped spinning. Like what else totally. are they doing? Like
I genuinely like Bud Light
over $1 billion.
Me too.
Sales. Like it. So I was like, yeah. It's not just for frat guys. Like I genuinely like Bud Light.
Lime is delicious and
my go-to beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so good. Like, it kind of gets framed as, like, the girly beer, but I'm like, I don't give a shit. It's delicious. Like, I like, there's a reason why those things are there. Like, it's like McDonald's. Like, I like it because I know it's bad for me. Like, I know it's shitty. And that's why I enjoy it.
Totally.
And but Cracker Barrel's kind of the same.
Speaking to that, yeah, you always know what you're going to get when you go to a McDonald's here in another
also,
country, whatever.
Your LA base, Miranda, In-N-Out Burger put a tweet out saying we'll never change. They were like, we're not
if
changing
they
our logo.
Change
we're not
their
changing.
Logo, yeah. I would be livid. So, you yes. know what?
Exactly. You get it.
I get
go.
It.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got
okay.
it. Yeah.
So they out, and they were like, we're never, it's they were like, we're not changing our logo.
Trees.
We're not changing our menu. Like, yeah. we will never change. So, In-N-Out Burger gets it.
If they change their menu, I'd freak out. Yep, I got it. All right, I got it.
We actually have another question. Emily, I hope you feel better. Thank you.
I will talk to you later, Emily.
Thank you. It's nice to see you as usual. We have Haley here. Do you want to join the Cracker Barrel conversation?
Or anything. Yeah. Hi.
Or anything. Hi, Haley. How are you?
Good. How are you? You both look beautiful today.
Oh, thank you.
Love your sweater, Miranda.
Oh, Amazon.
Always.
I can link it in my Instagram stories later.
Did you go to Harvard?
Oh, absolutely not. This is from
HR. I was going to say, do you want to co-host with me when Megan's gone on vacation?
I know.
I need some.
Definitely
smart
not.
Person.
I'm trying to take Harvard back is what's happening. It's from H&M.
Good luck.
So I think you had such a good point when you were talking about like in the general sense of like how I think a lot of like the woke rebranding of all these brands, like all of the outrage, not even just like with the rebrands and everything, but a lot of outrage when it comes to all of these woke issues are like older white women. And it's like,
totally.
It's like, I am a younger white woman. So like, I hope I don't get this phenomenon like when I get older, but it's like,
I know.
It's like, I know. It's like, it's giving us such a bad name. And it's like, not all of us are this like insane. And like, even like it brings me back to like the Sydney Sweeney thing. The only thing that I saw when like that outrage came out, the only TikToks, the only Instagrams were older white women. Like I could like go through that. And I just like, I don't understand this phenomenon of why it's like the people who are so outraged of like all of these cultural issues are just like one group of people. It's like, it really... Well,
I think you're right, Haley. And I am an older white woman. I'm 40. So like, okay. But I will tell you, there's been a controversy here in Virginia, about there's a governor's race and Abigail Spanberger, who's a Democrat, is running against Winsome Sears, who's a Republican. If Winsome Sears were to win, she would be the first female black governor in the United States. I'm personally a huge fan of her. She was in the Marines and she's just a really impressive person where I'm happily and easily voting for her. A woman went to one of her rallies protesting last week and had a sign that said, if you're not going to support like trans kids in bathrooms, because there's a scandal about
something like
thing. Yeah, then you'll be drinking at separate water fountains. And obviously that's like the most racist. It's like dictionary definition of racism. You're telling a black woman that you would rather her drink at a separate, have segregated drinking fountains because you don't like her politics. And I was so upset because I don't understand. And again, I'm going to say it's progressive white woman because it was a old white woman holding the sign. Why does it always circle back to like You're okay being racist. You're okay being so judgmental of people who eat at Cracker Barrel, who drink Budweiser, whatever. Like, you're so elitist. It's that horseshoe theory about like the woke left and the woke right. And I think it's actually like, not to get too deep, but I actually think it's like a problem for Democrats. I really do. Because if you are like the base of your party, which is progressive white women, like, can't understand that you don't get to be racist, you don't get to be snobby, you don't get to be an asshole to people just because they think differently than you or eat differently than you or drink different kinds of, you know, alcohol products. It's just really interesting, but I agree with you. It really freaks me out. I really don't want to turn into a, I mean, I'm never going to be an old progressive lady, but I totally fear as I get older, like whatever this phenomenon is with white women where their brains break and they act just like absolute fools and make spectacles of themselves because I don't want that to happen.
The Karenification.
And,
yeah.
And please come back on and kick my ass if I do, Haley. And Miranda will as well. And so on.
Not only that, I also find them, I'm born and raised in New York City, and half of my family is like progressive. Like they're Mom Donnie voters, which is absolutely insane to me. But they also, to me, are some of the most just completely close-minded people that I've ever met. And like, this is like, you know, half of like, these are my family members, but they are like, they do not want to hear anything about the opposite side. And it's specifically this group of people that are just so close-minded and closed off to other opinions besides themselves. And I think it's one to do with the other. It has to.
Can I ask you, Haley, just like on a total sidetrack, but you brought it up. I think that Mom Donnie has a very good chance of winning. How are you going to, because I have friends who live in the city who are conservative. How are you going to handle living under his regime, which is what I'm going to call it because he's a proud socialist, that some of his policies that he has, suggested, I not only find dangerous, but I find like un-American. Are you going to stay in the city? Is there nothing you can do? Or are you just going to continue to try and fight the good fight? Like, how do you feel?
Well, I just moved back. I actually lived in Texas for a couple of years. I lived in Dallas. So I did move back to the city in the last few months. So I am here to stay for now. Majority of my thinking is like, we have to, you know, fight back on everything that he's doing. But I also look at the bigger picture. And I do think that however long he's going to be in office, because I think it's inevitable, I think he's going to win. However long he's going to be in office, this is going to be like a test case. Like, he's going to do what he is going to try. Let's see if Albany's going to play ball with him. That's also another factor here. He's going to try what he's going to try. And then I think, and then after him, New York City is going to realize what a mistake was made and it's going to redirect itself. And we're going to have a Bloomberg-like person. I just think the pendulum is too far left right now, and they need to give it a try to see like what it's actually going to be like in practice, and then they're going to realize, oh, we made a mistake, and then I think it's going to shift back. It has to. I just think that New York City cannot function under what he's planning to do, and people are going to quickly realize it. They have to. I have hope.
I hope so. I hope so. Everything about it makes me really sad because I think like a healthy democracy has two normal parties. And if this is the direction Democrats are going, it really blows my mind. And his like stance on Israel and globalizing the Intifada, the fact that he won't disavow that, which is a call to violence against all Jewish people and Zionists, for people that don't know what that means, the fact that he won't disavow it, I mean, the largest Jewish population outside of Israel lives in New York City. Like,
but
how are they
supposed to? We have a problem in our own community because I just read that one of the biggest Jewish billionaires in New York City is either building a PAC for him or donating an obscene amount of money to his campaign. I don't remember which it was, and that's a problem within our own community that we have to address because for someone who is using Judaism as like they're thriving, you know, philanthropy and activism, and then to go and give all this money to somebody who is the antithesis of everything that you stand for in your community, it's a mess.
Do you know their name?
I don't, but I'm gonna look it up.
Don't worry about it.
Chat.
Well, please come on and tell us how it goes. I agree with you. I think there's an extremely high likelihood he gets elected. There's just too many other people in the race. I wish that Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa and I mean, they're all shitty candidates. I don't know. I
Exactly.
wish
They
they
were
would all.
thinking of the good of New York. They'd have dropped out a long time ago.
I agree, but I still have a lot of friends in New York. It's still an incredible, beautiful metropolis, and I don't want people to suffer. And I think there's going to be a lot of suffering under his mayoralship, and I think it's
I
just
agree.
a tragedy. I really do. Anyway, thank you so much, Haley, for joining. It's
Thank you,
always nice
guys.
to see
Love
your
your show.
face. Thank you. We
Thanks,
love
Haley.
you. Thank you. So we're going to switch gears just a little bit. So you guys have probably already seen, but there are National Guardsmen all over DC that Trump put into place to deal with the crime crisis. We have our own employee here at the Citizen McCain show. Russell Keskey is a George Washington College student who is also our college associate. Hello, Russell, here on Citizen
Russell.
McCain. Russell, thank you so much for coming on. So Russell is a student at George Washington College. I'm sorry, George Washington University, GW. Very, by the way, fancy, prestigious school for you to go to. I want to ask you about the DC crime. The Washington Post reported that President Trump was thinking about sending National Guards to Chicago as well. You live in Washington, DC, but you're also from Chicago. Can you tell us how it's been living in Washington, DC for you? And if you have been pleased with President Trump sending in the National Guard or if you have not liked it?
Well, first of all, thank you both for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the
Of
show.
course.
To your first question, I am in full support of the National Guard being here in DC. I have definitely noticed a change. I've been back in DC for almost a week now, and I've taken numerous walks around the city. I've gone grocery shopping. Another activity that my friends and I like to do, we call it monumenting, where we go walk to the White House and down the National Mall and up to the Lincoln Memorial. And we have noticed far fewer homeless people. We've noticed many National Guard troops keeping watch over the area. And one of the biggest changes that I've personally noticed is I feel that the city has gotten a lot cleaner. I've noticed that there's less trash on the streets, and there was actually a video I saw on Instagram last night, actually, of National Guardsmen cleaning up Lafayette Park.
I
And
saw
it's
that
very
too.
important to me that, and it should be important, frankly, to every citizen and every American, because this is our nation's capital, that when tourists and people from across the country come to visit Washington, that the capital is clean, that there aren't any homeless people living in tents on the streets, that they're in clinics and places in which they can get help, and that we also have law and order. So I would say that the National Guard being here has been definitely a positive thing.
One of the things that's been weird for me to observe is the amount of people who have really downplayed how bad it's been in DC. I have had my car windows bashed in. I know five people, five, who have been carjacked, including my hairstylist in Georgetown, who was removing potted flowers from the back of her car, and her car got carjacked while she was doing that to try and bring the flowers in front of her salon. It is not safe. I stopped sending my daughter to this play group because it was in an area where all these people were getting carjacked. And I just was like so worried that, like, I mean, it's like literally my worst nightmare to have something like that happen. And I go to the wharf to have dinner on occasion. And there has been crime sprees happening at the wharf as well and shootings. It's a beautiful area in DC. So it is very real. And I haven't really understood the downplaying. I've seen journalists on TV that were like, it's fine. This isn't like it was in the 90s. And it's like, there hasn't been a murder in 12 days, which I think is a good thing. I think it's good that we are not having murders in Washington, D.C. I don't know how long Trump can keep the National Guard in D.C., but as we said there, he's thinking about sending it to Chicago. I think it's also a great thing for Chicago. Poor residents of Chicago have had such a hard time with crime as well. We had Gianno Caldwell, our friend who came on, who lost his cousin in a tragic shooting on the south side of Chicago. So are you supportive of Trump sending the National Guard in, and do you think there could possibly be a positive experience with that as well?
Well, I would absolutely be in support of the president sending in the National Guard to Chicago because very similar to DC, crime is just an all too common occurrence in Chicago. And in many cases, crime in Chicago is not only confined to the South and West sides where most of the violence happens, but in more recent years on the north side of the city where I'm originally from, violence and robberies and carjackings and home burglaries have really become commonplace. And for those who don't know, we had six people murdered this past weekend from Friday to Sunday night in Chicago, and another
Gosh.
27 people shot and wounded. And Sunday night, we also, one of the largest stores, just a stone's throw away actually from the Magnificent Mile, the Nordstrom store, right off of Rush Street, which is a very major thoroughfare in Chicago, for those who don't know. It was burglarized by 10 individuals. And this was clearly a planned robbery in that there were 10 individuals in three cars. They all got out and forced their way into the building and stole a bunch of merchandise and got away with it. And the police are still investigating. So I think the National Guard being sent to Chicago would be a good thing because for the past couple of years, the police department's hands have just been tied. And many people thought that our previous mayor, Lori Lightfoot, was the worst thing that could happen to Chicago, but they were clearly wrong because now we have Brandon Johnson, who's done an innumerable amount of damage. I mean, the amount of damage that he has done to the city in just the 2 years that he's been mayor is impossible to quantify. So I think the National Guard would be excellent in Chicago because in DC, as we've seen, the results are there. I saw yesterday that carjackings in DC, since the National Guard was called in by Trump, carjackings are down 83%, robberies
Wow.
down 46%, and going 12 days without a murder, that's remarkable. And also, if I might add, Chicago has not gone a single day without a shooting since 2016. So I think
God.
bringing in the National Guard would very much restore that law and order component that the city so desperately needs.
Russell, what do you say to people who say that this is, tiptoeing into fascism or militarizing the police, and that this is, kind of our tiptoeing into just got way too much government overreach.
Well, I would say to those who try to invoke fascism and Nazi Germany as J.B. Pritzker, the Illinois
Yes.
governor, has done when discussing the actions of the Trump administration. I would say to those folks who are criticizing this move to listen to the victims of crime,
Yeah.
not just in D.C., but in Chicago. You can just listening to their stories, you can see that they're afraid to take their kids out at any point during the day because it's important to understand that these types of incidents, the carjackings, the robberies, this is not something that happens at night. This is not something that happens just in the impoverished, the neighborhoods that have been stricken with poverty. This is something that's happening at all times, all hours of the day. This is something that's happening even in the nicest neighborhoods. In Georgetown, I've heard stories from friends that have been shot at, robbed, jumped.
Georgetown's pretty bad, or it was.
It is. It still has some rough spots, I would say. And I would definitely not recommend walking around at any part of the city during the night. It's just not safe. Same with Chicago. Same with really any major city in general. But I would say to those who are doubting the president, or for those who are even going further by comparing it to fascism, I would say listen to the people who have been affected by it. Don't try to overlook their stories, and stop living in your bubble as well, because that's one thing I've especially noticed being on campus just over the past couple of days. Many of the professors and even some of the students here, not surprisingly, have been so outspoken in their opposition towards the National Guard. And I think people need to step out of their bubble, that is the GW campus, and they really need to go around the city and talk to everyday citizens. I think when you're in college, and even when you're a professor, you really only tend to focus on your little bubble of people. You don't really tend to focus on what everyday citizens are experiencing. So I think maybe choosing an alternative pathway than the pathway that they're currently on, which is they're being divorced from reality and they're living in their own bubble. I would
Yeah.
encourage them to listen to everyday citizens and go around the city and see what's actually happening. And also look at the numbers, because the numbers don't lie.
I think J.B. Pritzker too should. There's a horrific story about a woman whose 3-month-old was shot while she's just
Jesus
riding in her car in
Christ.
her car seat in Chicago, somewhat recently. I think it was a few months ago. And I would have J.B. Pritzker talk to that mother and say, does she care about which party is doing it, which president is going to try and clean everything up? And at a certain point, it's like, Senator Pritzker, this is your state. Why is crime this rampant? Why are you allowing it? Why haven't you done more to get things in order? And I know the argument of like, this is what Democrats want, but I can't imagine there's any voter on the planet that's like, we're okay with murder and crime and violence. And I think part of the problem with Democrats in this conversation is that you can tell people, like, I've seen a bunch of people on CNN saying, like, look at the graphs, like, murder's down a little bit, crime is down a little bit, but it doesn't feel that way. I go in DC all the time, like, all the time, every few days, like, all the time for meetings and lunch, whatever. And like, it does not feel safe. So you can't just sit there in your studio and tell me that everything's fine, it's no big deal, when I am freaked out about sending my daughter to a playgroup. So it's like, you know, and I think Democrats should have learned that lesson from 2020, that like, you can't just say like, some crime is fine and some violence is fine as long as it fits my particular political narrative. And I think it's a very dangerous road for them to go down. And I agree with you, Russell. I hope Trump sends in the National Guard to Chicago. I think the people of Chicago really deserve better. And there's a lot, like you said, the crime and the shootings and just these. I just think of Giano when he came on the show. It's just these horrific, horrific, godless stories about crime and violence and murder. And I hope, I don't really care. I don't care if it's AOC cleaning it up. I just want someone to do something about it. I don't, if it's Trump, great. If it's, you know, if Mom Donnie wants to send the National Guard in to like clear things up, fine. I'm all for no murder. So that's all I have to say. Do you want to talk about Russell, a recent Northwestern poll about college before you go really quick, or do you need to run?
I would love to. I
Okay, good.
have the time.
Full disclosure,
Okay.
Russell works with us on a very close basis and we adore him. He's
Yes.
our helper.
Russell is our college associate.
College associate. Not just
Thank
our helper. It's like you're not
you.
like an elf. You're
No.
a college
Russell is our
associate.
colleague. Yes. Thank
Yes.
you. So, and thank you. And we had our meeting and I was like, you should start coming on because we love speaking to you. So thank you. All
You're so
right. So
smart, yes.
Russell, this is a story that Miranda actually found. According to a recent Northwestern University poll, 88% of the students said that they pretended to be more progressive than they are to succeed academically or socially. 80% of students said that they submitted classwork that misrepresented their real views to conform to the progressive views of the professor. The divide between progressives and conservatives, which is also viewed as a disconnect between elites and non-elites, is a widespread issue through the West. Sociologist James Davidson Hunter also warns that political discourse has devolved into a fight for power without purpose, fueled by grievance and despair. Do you feel like people are sort of presenting themselves in a way to seem more progressive, just so they won't be harassed or ostracized in or out of the classroom?
Absolutely. And I think
That's
that's
so
one of
depressing.
the saddest, most unfortunate realities of being a university student. And unfortunately, it's not a problem that's limited to GW. It's a widespread problem all across America. And personally, there have been so many classes that I've taken just over the last 3 or 4 years where the professors, the first thing that the professor has done is articulate his or her political views by going on a rant and
Wow.
telling us that we have to believe this and that this is something that such and such that conservative viewpoints are wrong, that we should be, just recently as yesterday, my French literature professor took 5 or 10 minutes to go on a rant about how we should be resisting the Trump administration's push to have the National Guard in DC and in Chicago. And that is something that's just very unfortunate to me, because I know as soon as a professor articulates their political views, I'm going to have to tailor any assignment I do for them to fit their viewpoint and fit their narrative, even if it doesn't align with what the actual facts are or with what my viewpoint is. And I'm not so concerned about proving my viewpoint or proving someone else's viewpoint. I'm just interested, as any other student should be, in listening to the facts and just getting back to the basics, learning basic history. And it's really just a widespread problem, and it's having really, really terrible effects on many of the students. And in my constitutional law class this morning, you can see that the professors have spent way too much time focusing on proving their points to the students and not focusing on basic facts, because our constitutional law professor this morning was asking students if they could discuss what the legislative branch was. And there were only 3 or 4 people out of a 50 student class that could articulate that. So that to me is just reprehensible, that professors think it's their duty to tell students what to believe and what they should be doing. And unfortunately, I think until people step up and realize that this is wrong, and I've certainly been in that fight to try and move away from having these professors indoctrinate students, because I'm on the George Washington University College Republicans, and that's something that we've been very focused on. But I think until you have enough people that realize that this is wrong and that this is reprehensible, then you really won't see a change in those numbers.
It's really depressing. I don't know what Trump has to do with French literature, like at all. No offense to your professor. Hope they don't see
Very
this and
like
get angry.
I hope
intellectually
not either. I
dishonest.
don't think they will.
There's no way they're consuming this content. Don't worry.
No.
Well, anytime anything happens that you want to talk about, you can come on our show and, let us know, obviously. And I really appreciate your insight, Russell, and thank you for taking time today. I know you're incredibly busy at school, and we love working with you.
Me too.
Russell, do you want to plug your social media or anything, or just say goodbye?
Well, I'd just like to say it's been a pleasure to be on the show, and I thank you both very much. And
Thank you.
I really I know that you all were talking about earlier, and you were discussing this on Monday to some extent as well, that it's really sad that both of our parties have gotten to the point, they've become so extreme that when someone such as President Trump does something that's good, such as cleaning up DC and restoring law and order to the streets, the Democrats are just going to fight him tooth and nail. I think it's sad that we've become so polarized that when someone, regardless of their party affiliation, does something that furthers the interests of the nation's citizens, that the other party just has to fight them tooth and nail. That person, because their beliefs don't align with the opposition, we have to fight them tooth and nail. We can't, it can't just be a victory. I think the concept of a victory for everyone has largely been erased over the past couple of years, just due to the polarization. But I will say, I'll close off by just saying I hope that that changes and that people realize what's going on, and really step up to the plate and do the hard work of trying to build consensus.
I like that. We need
I
to bring
agree.
back the community. Yes, I love that.
Absolutely.
I like that too. Well, Russell, thank you so much for coming on, and come back anytime, and I'll see you in our next
Yes, we'll see you on
brainstorming meeting.
Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah,
Thank
I'll see
you.
you. Thank
Thank
you so
you.
much, Russell.
Take
Bye,
care, Russell.
Russell.
Take
Yep,
care.
we'll see you soon. Do you
I
really
love
quickly want
him.
to do Northwest, or do you want to move on and say goodbye?
I don't want to. Yeah, I we can say goodbye. I think everyone saw the picture,
Okay.
right?
We had a Northwest, the
Do
Kim
you want to do
Kardashian
it?
daughter topic. No, it's no big deal. She's not dressed the way we would dress our 12-year-olds. That's the
If
cliff
anybody wants
notes.
to hear the story, I asked Coco how old she thought North looked, and everyone's free to Google the picture of North in Rome, where my brother also is, by the way, because he got blessed by the Pope. Which is a nice story.
Nice, yes.
She thought North was 30 years old, which is horrible because she's 12. Poor thing. So anyway,
Yeah, it's really sad.
it's a lot for North. So
We want to thank all of our guests for calling in, and Russell, obviously,
Russell,
for
who's fabulous.
joining our show and also working on our show. He's really a gem, like a really diamond in the rough, much like everyone else who works on the show.
But you know
I'm
what?
going to
He's
say something.
Kara's
Yes.
nephew. That genetic tree is
Yeah,
just
she's our Booker's nephew. Okay, we're giving away all our secrets. Okay, she's our
but I
Booker's
mean,
nephew. Okay,
Nepo, another Nepo baby.
our producer and Booker Kara is our nephew. It's a secret. He's
That a
our college
secret?
program.
Why is that a secret?
Yes,
I'm
but he
just
works on
saying.
our show. Yes, and we have great people who work on it. I have a really I'm not just saying is I have a one of my gifts is I have a knack for spotting talent in general in life, like with media. I really do. Like, and we have I'm not going to name names, but there's a few people that this was the first show they came on, and now they have big careers right now. Some of them aren't so nice to me anymore, but that's a whole other story for another time.
Where's
But
my
we
teacup?
like. Yes, but we have but I have a knack for spotting talent. I think if Russell wants to do on camera stuff, he certainly can. He's a great producer. Kara's a wonderful producer. You're a wonderful producer. Ashley's a wonderful producer. We have a great team here at Two Way, and I still am feel so lucky that they let me staff my own show because I don't want to
Can I
work
say,
with
Megan, you're a wonderful
strangers.
producer and you're a wonderful host and friend.
I try. Our YouTube numbers aren't showing that I'm a great
Ah,
host anymore.
fuck it.
Like, okay. The bitch out here, you guys. Gosh. Anyway, but we're gonna keep on keeping on. And like I said, we have hope you guys have a wonderful Memorial Day. We are not gonna have a show on Monday. I think we're gonna do an extra show next week. I have to talk to our the people that are above us on the chain of command. But I hope you guys all have a wonderful long weekend with your families and friends and all the things. And yeah, that's it. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.